Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 5, texts 7 and 8. We have 8 on the board. Hum sastriya mitchini bhavametam.
Hum sastriya mitchini bhavametam.
Trayor mito hiraya grantamahu.
Trayor mito hiraya grantamahu.
Ato griha chetra sutapta vitaya.
Ato griha chetra sutapta vitaya.
Janasya moho yam aham mameji.
Janasya moho yam aham mameji.
Of a male. Striya,
Striya
of a female. Mittuni bhavam,
attraction for sexual life.
Etam,
this.
Tayo,
of both of them.
Mita,
between one another.
Hridaya grantim,
the knot of the hearts.
Ahu,
they call.
Ata,
thereafter.
Griha,
by home.
Chetra,
field.
Suta,
children.
Apta,
relatives.
Vitae,
and by wealth.
Janasya,
of the living being.
Moha,
illusion.
Ayam,
this.
Aham,
I.
Mama,
mine.
Iti,
thus.
Translation. I suppose we should read text 7 before we go to text 8. Text 7. Even though one may be very learned and wise, he is mad if he does not understand that the endeavor for sense gratification is a useless waste of time. Being forgetful of his own interest, he tries to be happy in the material world, centering his interests around his home, which is based on sexual intercourse and which brings him all kinds of material miseries. In this way, one is no better than a foolish animal. Purport. In the lowest stage of devotional life, one is not an unalloyed devotee. Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma jnanavritam. To be an unalloyed devotee, one must be freed from all material desires and untouched by fruit of activity and speculative knowledge. On the lower platform, one may sometimes be interested in philosophical speculation with a tinge of devotion. However, at that stage, one is still interested in sense gratification and is contaminated by the modes of material nature. The influence of Maya is so strong that even a person advanced in knowledge actually forgets that he is Krishna's eternal servant. Therefore, he remains satisfied in his householder life, which is centered around sexual intercourse. Conceding to a life of sex, he agrees to suffer all kinds of material miseries. Due to ignorance, one is thus bound by the chain of material laws. Text 8. Translation. The attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and female, one becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. Purport. Sex serves as the natural attraction between man and woman, and when they are married, their relationship becomes more involved. Due to the entangling relationship between man and woman, there is a sense of illusion whereby one thinks, this man is my husband, or this woman is my wife. This is called Hridaya Granthi, the hard knot in the heart. This knot is very difficult to undo, even though a man and woman separate, either for the principles of Varnashrama or simply to get a divorce. In any case, the man always thinks of the woman, and the woman always thinks of the man. Thus, a person becomes materially attached to family, property, and children, although all of these are temporary. The possessor, unfortunately, identifies with his property and wealth. Sometimes, even after renunciation, one becomes attached to a temple or to the few things that constitute the property of a sannyasi, but such attachment is not as strong as family attachment. The attachment to the family is the strongest illusion. In the Satya Samhita, it is stated, Brahmajya Yajyavalkajya Muchyante Sri Sahayana Bodhyante Keshanite Sham Visesham Cha Vido Vidu. Sometimes it is found among exalted personalities, like Lord Brahma, that wife and children are not a cause of bondage. On the contrary, the wife actually helps further spiritual life and liberation. Nonetheless, most people are bound by the knots of the marital relationship, and consequently they forget their relationship with Krishna. Om Agyana Kimanandasya, Gyananjana Shalakaya, Chakshun Militam Yena, Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. If you are seeking to understand the mystery of Western so-called civilization, it is described very prominently in this chapter, Lord Rishabhdev's teachings. Lord Rishabhdev is speaking at Brahmavarta, a place described by Srila Prabhupada to be either Burma or somewhere in the present UP. At this convocation of great sages, there are brahmanas speaking and giving instruction. Lord Rishabhdev has also begun to speak. Although he's a king, he's Kshatriya. He's giving instruction, particularly to his sons, but everybody is listening. Although Lord Rishabhdev is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, still, when he ruled his kingdom, he would always listen to the brahmanas. The brahmanas are speaking at Brahmavarta. Still, Lord Rishabhdev, he will also speak, because he has to prepare his sons for their future. Lord Rishabhdev had 100 sons from his wife, Jayanti. 9 of these sons were great preachers of Srimad Bhagavatam, which you will hear about in the 11th canto. They are the Navayogendras. 11 of the 100 were going to be Kshatriyas, headed by Bharata Maharaj. They were going to rule the earth. The other 80 were brahmanas, expert in ritualistic activities. Lord Rishabhdev is speaking to teach them the principles of how to be peaceful amidst the miserable material world. That is the job of the government head. Not to focus the people on economic development for sense gratification, but to actually give satisfaction to the people so that they'll understand spiritual nourishment is what they should be striving for. When Prabhupada began to speak Lord Rishabhdev's teachings, text 1, Nayam deha deha bhajanya loke, kastan kaman ahate vidbhujanye. He explained that this knowledge is very revolutionary and could actually get him in trouble with governments. What is the revolutionary thing? Do not work hard for sense gratification. Do not waste your life pursuing the same pleasures that are available to the dogs and hogs. This is the first devastating point I encountered from Srila Prabhupada. I had just finished university and I was on my way somewhere in New York metropolitan area to meet my fiance. And on the way, I happened across a book distributor and he offered me a book, Transcendental Teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. So I was always on the lookout for esoteric knowledge, and I accepted the Sankirtan devotee's presentation, and at the same time my fiancée was coming, and I figured, well, I'll get money from her. I had money, but I figured, you know, the purpose of a girlfriend is that she pays for everything. So I said, hey, give him some bucks. You know, I want this book. So she thought, oh, that's my man. He's always doing such far-out things. Yeah, I'll get this book. Why not, you know? So I got the book, and I went to her house. She went in the kitchen to cook some abominable foodstuffs, and I was sitting on the couch in the living room beginning to read this Transcendental Teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. And I looked and I saw Prahlad Maharaj saying basically the same thing that Lord Vrishabhdev is saying. Why should you use the human body to get the same pleasure that the cats and dogs are getting? Sukham aindrikam daicha deha yogena deja. The flavor or the rasa, the taste of sense gratification that the human gets is the same thing that the cats and dogs get. This is a very humiliating and actually devastating point. I read that by Prahlad Maharaj and I slumped over actually on the couch in the living room. Then immediately my fiance came running out of the kitchen. What's wrong, dear? What's wrong? I just stood up and, oh, nothing, nothing, nothing at all. The next day, I said, I'm going to Greenwich Village. I'm going to find some more books by this Prabhupada. He really knows how to teach knowledge as it is. Now, I have to admit, my consciousness before reading Prabhupada's books was atrocious. Just 3 months before I got that book, that Transcendental Knowledge from Srila Prabhupada, I was finishing my years at the university, writing my final thesis. And my roommate was doing his, preparing for his physics exam. There we were at what is sometimes periodically considered to be the finest undergraduate university in the USA. And we wanted relief from our studies, so we turned on the television. And because we were high class, super polished students, we did not watch TV in the ordinary way. We watched it by keeping the volume turned down and speculating about what's going on. So suddenly there appeared on the television these strange looking people with shaved heads, wearing dhotis, and some ladies wearing saris. One was our Jayadwita Maharaj. So, so I just told my roommate, turn the TV up. These people look weird. Let's hear what they've got to say. So Jayadwita Maharaj and company, they began to describe the lifestyle of a devotee, how they don't do this, they don't do that, and especially they don't do that. So I have to admit my condition before encountering Prabhupada's mercy, that when I heard the devotees describe their regular principles and their lifestyle, I turned to my roommate and said, these people are fools. They miss the goal of life. I said, we ought to invite them to one of our parties. We'll show them what bliss is. So that was 3 months before encountering Prabhupada's literature. But upon reading Prabhupada's books, his concepts devastated my materialistic mentality. Prabhupada's books give you things to think about. They give you axioms and principles that can absorb your intelligence all your life. That's what Prabhupada had in mind when he said you should study his books. It's not so much the language, the word-for-word language of Prabhupada's books. It can be said at this point that, well, even when Prabhupada wrote his books back in the 60s and 70s, his language was a little antiquated. And as you move into the 21st century, that may become more and more apparent. And of course, his books are being translated in so many languages, and that means Prabhupada's precise dictation is not going to be there in another language. But what we should focus on as important are the concepts that Prabhupada is teaching us. How we are entangled in material existence. How we concede to a life of sex. How we are under the spell of material nature. How we are caught in the clutches of illusion. These concepts can inspire a revolution in our life. If we absorb our intelligence in grappling with these principles Prabhupada is giving in his purports, we'll become free from material nature. Lord Rishabhdev wants that freedom from material nature and the resultant engagement in the Lord's service to be made available to everyone. Therefore, he's teaching his sons. And what he's teaching his sons would be considered today to be very revolutionary. Don't waste your life. Perform austerities and penances. Nunam pramata guru deva dharma yarindriya pritya aproti. When you consider sense gratification to be the goal of life, you become mad. Several times in this chapter, madness is described as pursuing sense gratification. Nasarumanye yata atmanoyam asan api preshada asadeha. Lord Rishabhdev says, look, you've already got a material body that's the result of sense gratification. Why do you want to engage in sense gratification and thereby perpetuate the cycle of you getting one body after another? Why don't you stop that? How do you stop it? Mahat Sevam Dwaram Avogamukte. You associate with the great souls. They will teach you how to cut the knot of material existence. And what is that knot of material existence all about? You're hearing it in these two verses today. You may consider yourself learned and wise. You may consider yourself. But you're mad if you don't understand that the endeavor for sense gratification is a waste of time. I remember further incidents, very embarrassing incidents, during university career. My fiancée, she took her studies very seriously. She wanted to go to the top of society and become famous and celebrated. And I would always tell her, look, you're going to super prestige university. Isn't that enough? You just graduate and the employers, they see you have a diploma from this school. You don't even have to look for a job. So just, you know, why don't we just enjoy our senses and forget about this study, you know? Just do the minimum to graduate. Everything will be all right. No, she couldn't accept that. I've got to be number one. I've got to graduate magna cum laude. I've got to get an award. So I was just always in anxiety, like, she's going to fry herself out trying for all these material goals, and I'm going to have to deal with that. Forget it. It's not worth it. Even in a sense gratification, it's not worth it. So she went to one of her teachers. She was in distress. She was not getting honors. She was on the way to getting just a little bit less than honors. So she went to talk to the teacher how she could improve, how she could master the knowledge and become fully equipped with high scholarship. And what did this one of the most famous professors at Yale University? He just looked at her and said, what's someone looking like you worried about grades for? Don't you know this is all a game? It's just all a bunch of rhetoric. So just do the minimum. You know, someone looking like you is going to get high grades this way or that way. Don't worry about it. It's just all a game. So she came back to me, totally bewildered. You know, famous professor so-and-so, he told me this. I said, I told you, Jesse. We should just enjoy your senses and forget about, you know, trying to be a star in society. These are persons considered to be learned. These are persons considered to be wise. Totally attached to sense gratification. I used to work for professors while I was going to school because I was on scholarship, so they made us pretend to work 5 hours a week in the office of a professor. So they would always tell me, you know, you must know how to be happy. You young students must know how to be happy. Do you think we really enjoy all these studies all the time? No, we'd like to know. Where is good drinking? Where is good sex life? I was a bit taken aback. Yes, they did have a penchant for knowledge. That can't be denied. But at the same time, such frustration I saw amongst persons who were supposed to be so learned and wise. I could see they were in anxiety about getting the same thing that the carefree students could easily get at any moment. Therefore, when I encountered Prabhupada's books, I understood this is real knowledge. This is someone who can actually explain how to get out of the mystery of sense gratification and what lies beyond that. How can you make advancement living in a society that simply offers you intense economic development and sense gratification? That is all that Western so-called civilization has to offer. And this goal is being pushed all around the world with great intensity and enthusiasm, especially now because we may have just finished the longest period of American economic growth. It may have finished. That has made a great influence all over the world because everyone wants to buy into this dream of economic expansion. Everyone is being led to believe that when the economy grows, happiness grows. Prabhupada gave a very interesting definition of economic development. He said, economic development is lust on an organized scale. So everyone knows individually what it's like to be lusty. Now you take economic knowledge, sociological knowledge, knowledge of political science, and use that for how to organize the lust. That is Western so-called civilization. Everywhere people are being made to feel concerned. How is our economy doing? What's the gross national product? How's our currency exchange rate in relation to other countries? These are the anxieties people are feeling. How's the stock exchange doing? No one is considering, I have the human form of life, I must make a solution to the problems of life and go back to Godhead. No one even recognizes anymore that material life is a problem. For example, in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Uddhava asked the Supreme Lord a question. He says that generally human beings can look ahead and see that material life brings great unhappiness in the future. Still, however, they engage in material activities and suffer. Why is this? The great achievement of Western so-called civilization is that people no longer can even see that in the future material life brings suffering. Everyone has this illusion burning in their brain that I shall be happy, I shall enjoy, I will get more money will lead to more sense gratification. This dream is being spread to undeveloped countries. It's possessing everyone. So no longer can you even say you're dealing with polished animals. Now you have the real thing. You have people who have difficulty accepting that the dream of material happiness is just that. No, they actually think people are happy. Sense gratification does work. Maybe not for me, but for the other person. Happiness is there. I'm going to get it. Another thing, Lord Vrishabhdev says that they center their interests around their home, which is based on sexual intercourse. According to the social understanding that is being spread now around the world, the home is finished. I've talked to professors from Harvard who, they tell me, yes, we are indeed part of the so-called conspiratorial Club of Rome. And yes, we do make sociological studies about how to get rid of the home. Because indeed, those who are supporting us, they have said, homes are a barrier to economic development. We want everyone to be dependent on the government or dependent on corporations. In that way, they can more effectively be utilized for economic development. But if you have people attached to their homes, especially the middle class, they just get in the way. They're neither rich, they're not poor. They simply are concerned with middle class values. We want that people either be controllers or the control. Recently I had the former Prime Minister of New Zealand tell me the same thing. You may say, oh, he's Prime Minister. He was Prime Minister of New Zealand, a small country. But no, he's an international player. He flies off to America and gives graduation talks at Harvard and Yale. He's part of the club. So I began to ask him questions. What kind of social policies do you and your friends actually think about? I've heard that you actually discuss how to get rid of the family, how to get rid of the home, how to get rid of the middle class. And he kind of looked at me, because he had come to our Hare Krishna Center, and he had actually 10 years ago done a groundbreaking ceremony for a new temple. So he was a friend of the Hare Krishnas. So there I was, amongst other devotees, and I told him that, and he looked at me and said, how do you know all these things? In other words, what are Hare Krishnas doing, understanding all these things? And then he said, look, all that is true, but let me give you a bit of advice. If you are smart enough to understand all this, become one of us. Otherwise, just be controlled. You've got two choices. Either you're smart and you understand what's going on and you become one of us, or you don't know anything, you're an ignorant fool, enjoying your senses through intoxication, illicit sex. Just do that and be happy. But don't blame us. Somebody has to control. So he began to explain. He said, I used to have a conscience about this. Why should some people be actively thinking how to control the world? Now, I'm not saying the whole world is under control of conspiracy or this, but definitely not saying that. But the point is, he's admitting some people are thinking like that for the purpose of economic development. He said, I used to think bad about such persons. But then I realized, look, somebody's got to be in charge. Someone's got to control. So if people just want sense gratification, we should give them that, and there'll never be a revolution. In other words, some people are misusing their intelligence, how to keep people in bondage. And here we are, as a small group of Hare Krishnas, giving people information how to get out of bondage. There has to be a little contradiction somewhere. There has to be some strife. People are finding out that it's better to stay at work than to go home. I have seen sociological studies of the USA in which corporations are understanding if our personnel would spend a bit more time with their families, we would get better production out of them. So we're going to give them some time. We'll give the ladies maternal leave to spend a year or so with their children. We'll have company picnics where families are encouraged to come together. What did this sociological report find? It found that although the corporations want people to spend more time with their families, the people don't want to. Their family life is hellish. They'd rather stay at work. Therefore, the title of this sociological report is When Work Becomes Home. Because no one knows how to have a family anymore. They can't raise their kids properly. Their kids are problematic, even in wealthy families. They can't have a proper relationship between husband and wife. Therefore, they calculate, I'll spend 12 hours a day at work, I'll get paid for it, and everything is organized at work. There's friends there, there's opportunity for illicit affairs, there's an orderly system of recognition and praise. Everything works fine at work, but when I go home, it's totally hellish. Therefore, I'd rather stay at work. This is what's going on, and this is the kind of culture that is being spread around the world. No one is interested in family life anymore because what's the point? We don't need it. We need opportunity for money and we need opportunity for sex. These things can happen outside of the family. I know my brother. He's a Harvard Law graduate and he married a Harvard Law student. And my brother wanted a family. He has a very affectionate mother, so he thought, I'll have a home and it'll be just like that. But he and his wife, they ended up working 12 hours a day. He for the Justice Department, she for some Fifth Avenue law firm in Manhattan. So they would rarely see each other. And my brother always lamented, you know, I'd just like to have a meal at home with my wife and then have some physical intimacy and then go to sleep. That's all I want, but just not getting that. She made an arrangement. Whoever gets home at 7:30, 8 o'clock at night and is the least tired, that's the person who cooks. So, what happened was that they both come home dead tired. None of them cook, so they go out to eat every night, just charge it on their credit card. After a couple of years of this, my brother started to push her. You know, I'd like to have kids. I come from a warm family. I'd like to have some children. She lashed him. Do you think I'm going to ruin my career by raising a child? I've got plans on my mind. I didn't expect this marriage would interfere with my development. So my brother was really distressed. He would always tell me, I just want to come home, have a meal, have some physical intimacy, go to sleep and go to work. I can't do that. The Bhagavatam criticizes materialistic householders that they're simply interested in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Here my brother is saying, I can't even get that. Here he is, a Harvard Law graduate, living in a condominium in Brooklyn, and he says, I just want to eat, I just want to sleep, I just want to mate, I can't get that. And this is the height of society. So he kept pressuring his wife, I want a kid, I want a kid, and she's saying, I want my career, I want my career. Finally, she came up with a tactic. One day, infrequent visit to New York, I visited them, and there was, outside their condo, was a brand new red Mercedes. So I asked his wife, oh, what's this? She said, that's his baby. I figured I'll buy him a brand new Mercedes with cold cash. That'll keep him off my case. That'll be his kid. So that lasted for another couple of years. Then finally she had to relent because she was attached. She was attached to him, but she also wanted to do what she wanted to do. When she saw that she might lose him, then she conceded, okay. She laid off the contraceptives for a while. She had a kid. And so the kid was 5 months old the next time I heard from her. I said, well, you had one. You're really going to stay at home and take care of the kid? She said, are you crazy? When this kid is 6 months old, he's going into the nursery, and I'm going back to work. These things are quite common. People do not want to be even shackled by a materialistic home. Lord Rishabhdev's teachings are far above what we have today. Lord Rishabhdev is criticizing human sense gratification. But you don't have human life these days. Therefore, this makes it very difficult to preach Krishna consciousness because you're dealing with people coming from a totally unregulated, barbaric lifestyle. And then immediately, they're ushered into ashram life sometimes. Immediately, they're ushered into regulated Krishna conscious living. That causes problems. When you understand where they're coming from, you can see that there's going to be required a lot of help individually for persons to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. They're not coming from even what some of us would consider the degraded life of the 60s and 70s. That's nothing in comparison to what's going on now. In the 60s and 70s, so many of us older devotees came from relatively stable homes. We knew what it's like to have a mother and father, even if we rebelled against them. We knew what it's like to have an orderly Western standard of life. Now that is finished. Family values have broken down. People start engaging in illicit sex at the age of 13 under the guidance of their parents. Just do it at home. Bring them home. And if it happens at our house, then at least we have some supervision over the situation. This is completely considered normal these days. These persons then come to Krishna consciousness, and we cannot expect that there's going to be a peaceful transition without a lot of personal guidance and care. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that to make one devotee, you have to expend hundreds of gallons of blood. That was back in the early 20th century in India. You can just imagine. You can't imagine what it's like now. Because everyone is coming from an abused home. That's quite common. Last time I checked, the statistics for the USA were that more frequent than one out of every four children has been abused by someone the child knows, either family member or friend. These things are so common, abuse is so rampant, unregulated lifestyles are the norm, that when such persons come to Krishna consciousness, unless they get a lot of personal attention and focus on chanting the holy name, they will not make advancement. We've been discussing, some of us, about the necessity for dedicated chanting of the holy name. How, without that, there's no real spiritual advancement, and sooner or later, problems in one's spiritual development manifest. How to crack this intense degradation that is being pushed all over the world, this intense economic development urge, and the intense principle that there are no principles. If your senses feel that they want to do something, you have an obligation to let them do that. That will make you psychologically healthy. How are we going to produce strong devotees in this kind of flood of degradation? There has to be maximum attention on solid hearing and chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Otherwise, to battle off these modes of material nature, practically impossible. We do have everything it takes for victory, but sometimes we become slack and negligent about the very means of conquest that have been given to us. Through attentive chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, all the vices of Kali Yuga can be more than compensated for. That's why in the Bhagavatam, there's that verse that great saints and sages worship Kali Yuga. How could anybody in their right mind worship a period like today in which there's not human life anymore and such degradations are prevalent? But yet these saints and sages, they worship Kali Yuga because in this age, through chanting Hare Krishna properly, we can go back to Godhead very easily. Once we recognize that attentive chanting, dedicated chanting is the be-all of our life, it's the centerpiece of our life, then Krishna consciousness makes sense. Prabhupada has established a society in which we can, Ravindra Sri Prabhu was describing a few days ago in his seminar, where we can properly hear and chant Srimad Bhagavatam. That's not a casual thing. In order to ensure that the Bhagavatam message is properly passed on, there has to be a proper audience and proper speakers. So Prabhupada devised a society that can properly come together and hear and chant about Krishna. That means a society in which people have the qualifications to appreciate the holy name of the Lord, to cultivate the holy name of the Lord. Lord Rishabhdev, he's speaking at Brahmavarta amidst an audience that has the qualification to accept what he says and put it into action. Similarly, we need to concentrate on developing a society that takes the chanting of Hare Krishna as our everything. For example, we were discussing last night at the book distribution seminar how the way Prabhupada presented book distribution was actually an expansion of japa. I knew about what Prabhupada had said in 1977. He was asked in London on his last trip there, how can one be an empowered book distributor? So what did Prabhupada respond? Oh, you have to learn certain lines, you have to learn certain sales techniques, you have to consider so many material factors. No. He said, to be an empowered book distributor, you chant your 16 rounds from beginning to end without interruption. Now, I had known about that for some years. Then, just a few months ago, an old Los Angeles devotee was telling me about a meeting that Prabhupada had with the first Sankirtan devotees in Los Angeles in 72. That's where and when the big boom in book distribution in America began. So Prabhupada called these devotees into his room, and he began to thank them so humbly. You all are helping me please my spiritual master. You're helping me fulfill his desire. I thank you so much. And they were just like knocked over by Prabhupada's simplicity and humility and his utmost emotional praise he was lavishing upon them, appreciation. Thank you. You're helping me please my spiritual master. So then, at that time, someone asked the same question that was asked in 1977. Prabhupada, how do we become an empowered book distributor? And what did Srila Prabhupada say? He said the same thing. So in other words, you have 1972, where the book distribution boom began, where and when, and you have 1977, the last few months of Prabhupada's appearance in this world. Both times he answered the question the same way. So this is very important for how to reignite the book distribution fever in ISKCON. Let's do it a little bit different this time. Okay, it's all right to be fired up, and yes, distribution ki jai, and yes, enthusiasm has to be there, otherwise nothing gets done. And even Prabhupada said himself, sometimes it has to be a little pushing to get them out there with the books. He wasn't against it. He said, it has to be there sometimes. But he also gave the most important instruction, but that we didn't seem to pay attention to. In fact, this instruction seems to have become a bit lost. In the beginning and in the end, he said the same thing. Chant your 16 rounds from beginning to end without interruption. You'll be empowered. So we asked last night how many of the Sankirtan devotees out of 35 ever heard that. None of them had heard about it in 72. Three of them had heard about it in 77, and no one was doing it. So this is something that we have to take very seriously, because if we don't have the empowerment to distribute Prabhupada's books, then how will people get the knowledge to come out of illusion? His books present so scientifically how the material energy works, how you become covered, how you become implicated, how you lose your sense of what is important. And of course, his books describe positive engagement at Krishna's lotus feet. The books are so important that, as we were discussing last night, one of our godbrothers in Vrindavan, Dhananjaya, he just told me last Kartik, he said, Prabhupada told me that even if, and of course, you know this even if is not going to happen, he said, even if all the temples in ISKCON close, my books are out there. Someone will read my books and know how to start the complete Hare Krishna movement again. This is how powerful Prabhupada's books are, and this is how much conviction he had in these books, which he often said, I didn't write them, Krishna wrote them. This is an immense responsibility, how to distribute that kind of knowledge, which is so powerful that Prabhupada said, even if every one of our temples closes, a new person will get my books, read the books, and know how to reestablish the Hare Krishna movement. How are we going to become empowered to distribute that kind of knowledge? That should be our concern. Whether we're congregational members or brahmacharis or whatever, we can all take part in this mission, but we have to have qualification. Otherwise, our enthusiasm will fade. Sometimes we're looking about here and there. Oh, this, as Rabindra Sarup says in his seminar, the quotes probably, the great stalwarts in the line of devotional service. They look like they've fallen here, they've fallen there. Why should we venture out now? Such and such person did so much service, caused so many books to be distributed. Where is that person now? Better look after your own self and be honest about your sense gratification and indulge in it and leave it at that. Sometimes devotees, or often, they're thinking like, why should we put ourselves out when so many great devotees have fallen? I remember when I was a young Sankirtan devotee in New York under the guidance of Ramapad Maharaj. He was a brahmachari then. So I had on my locker, and back then our lockers for each brahmachari were that much wide and that tall. And in that space you fit all your possessions. And then on top of all the lockers, you threw your sleeping bag. So I had on my locker door a letter from Prabhupada. And went, not to me, but it was written to a leader who had disappointed him. And Prabhupada started off very emotionally, very heart-touching way. I have given you such an opportunity to do great things for Lord Chaitanya. I have given you such responsibility and such facility to engage in the Lord's service. Now I'm hearing such distressing things about you. You cannot imagine how forlorn, how sad I'm feeling. Prabhupada actually used the word forlorn. It's a very eloquent word in English. A deep sadness in the heart, forlorn. So you cannot imagine how forlorn I'm feeling. But then he went on to say, although you've had such opportunity and you're disappointing me so much, I know that Lord Chaitanya will send me the right persons to spread his movement. If not you, somebody else. Therefore, we cannot just say that because this one fell, that one fell, problems with this, problems with that. Almost all of us have seen some tough times. Almost all of us have had a chance to kind of swallow the soap and blow bubbles. These things are going on. Yet and still, Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement will go on. The question is, will we take the opportunity to become used by Lord Chaitanya, regardless of what this so-called big one did or that so-called big one? Whenever there's a decline in the Sankirtan movement, sometimes defeatism sets in. I remember going to Germany right after some great difficulties there. The government had slammed everything shut, and it looked very bleak. And then, by some efforts, things began to start going very dynamically again. And Prabhupada's reaction was, what? They told me everything was finished, but I see that Krishna has said, let there be an increase. So one went down, and then Krishna used others how to make it go again. Of course, we don't want to go down. And if we learn how to chant, or try to chant without offense, we will not go down. But the point is that Lord Chaitanya's movement is bigger than us. It's going to go on. We want the credit, no matter how meek and humble we should think we are. We want to be recognized by Krishna that I try. Prabhupada compares the situation to be like a war in which a boy from the country, an innocent farmer boy, can go to the front lines and become a great hero. So we have that kind of opportunity. How will the preaching, the book distribution take off again? Somebody's going to do it. Krishna will use someone. They'll become the future so-called big devotees, and hopefully they won't think that they're that big. And this way they'll be able to maintain themselves by trying to hear the Hare Krishna mantra. But it will go on. So we need to leave aside this defeatist, cynical attitude and learn that because this is Krishna's desire, it will happen. The question is, will I be a part of that desire? Lord Rishabhdev is making such effort to educate his sons for the betterment of the world, giving such powerful teachings. Prabhupada has taken such effort to write these books, to urge us to distribute them, to urge us to read them, particularly when Prabhupada would come to Australia. Those of you from Australia, take note. He would say, my books are not just for selling, they are for reading. Why are we reading them? Yes, it pleases the founder Charya if you read his books, but please also understand that these books contain the concepts and the education that is necessary to free you from material desires and attach you at Krishna's lotus feet. Whether the language is like this or that is not important. The concepts are what are important. Therefore, Prabhupada's instructions for anyone who wants to learn how to preach, he wrote this several times in the 70s. I know because while producing books at the BBT, I also had the job of filing Prabhupada's letters. So all the letters both to and Prabhupada came to me, and I was supposed to file them. And I remember the GBC in LA at the time, he told me, now look, Dave Amrita, you file these letters, but don't you read them. Wouldn't read a thing. Of course, I was studying them hours every day. So I saw so many letters from Prabhupada in which he said, he's answering the question, how do you learn how to preach? He said, cram my purports. He used that word. You cram my purports. You memorize my purports and repeat them, and in time, your own style will develop. Meaning, in time, you may not say it word for word, but you'll preach the concepts in your own language, in your own style. And then I also saw when devotees would ask him how to write, Prabhupada would reply, you study my purports and put the message in your own words. Put the thoughts in your own words. So this is how significant Prabhupada took his books to be. Not only for the conditioned souls, but also for the devotees trying to escape conditions. His books are meant to form your thinking process. His books are meant to form your conceptual foundation of your life so that you can speak and write according to Prabhupada's concepts. And then Prabhupada considered, yes, my job is done. So these are some very important points that we can meditate on in this situation of Lord Rishabhdev giving crucial instructions to his 100 sons, 9 of whom are going to be very famous as the Navayogendra preachers of Bhagavatam. One is going to be Bharat Maharaj, emperor of the world. So these instructions are very crucial for our well-being, and it takes a lot of thought to stick them into our hearts. Lord Rishabhdev is saying one thing, I'm thinking another. How can it be that I'm attached to Pumsastriya Nittani Bhava? And Lord Rishabhdev is saying, no, don't go that way, but I'm feeling like I want to go that way, indulge in that way. What can be done? That is a wonderful way to read Prabhupada's books. Challenge yourself. I'm feeling one way, the books are saying another thing. What process, what methodology am I going to adopt to get out of my predicament? When you start to read Prabhupada's books like that, then you're able to inspire others to read the same books, and they'll also be infused with that dedication. They'll get it from you. And this way, real book distribution will expand all over the world. Distributing the books and giving people association to learn how to make these books their everything. I think we're a bit over time, and I don't want to hold up the MIHE. End there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.